Hello everybody and welcome back. It's Chris and Jonathan here from Charity Digital. Thanks again for downloading the latest Charity Digital podcast. Previously we have delved into the topic of digital strategy, and we found when traversing those areas that there was a lot more content to be talked about. Our first podcast kind of focused on, you know, that statistic of 50% of charities haven't got a digital strategy, and we really delved into the why. And if you haven't listened to that podcast, I recommend you go do so after this one. Part two is an extension of that, and we really sort of look at the practical steps that 50% who don't have a digital strategy can take to get them started and get them on that digital journey. So Jonathan, in this pod you sort of pick up the conversation again with Claire, Owen, Rob and Vince. What were your key takeaways and highlights from the chat?
So the really great thing about this podcast was we were able to drill into really detailed, simple steps that charities can take. And the concept of these, you know, these don't all need to be kind of changing the earth type of actions. Some of them are quite simple steps you can take around using prepackaged solutions, improving your back office, and use these small steps to gain confidence, really. So I really liked the way that our panel participants were able to bring that out. They then went on to look at, you know, how you decide which areas to focus in, because this is another challenge area, trying to do too much at once. So there are decisions to be made. And also how to avoid the pitfalls, you know, so where are the bear traps and how do you avoid them? So all of that, to me, rolled together into a session that was really, really practical and grounded, and something that hopefully our listeners can use to help them move forward in a very practical and rapid way.
Yep, great stuff. That's another step on the ladder of the digital strategy conversation. So let's get started with the podcast. We pick back up where we left off with Jonathan addressing the panel.
We've had some really good discussion. I want to particularly think about now and talk about maybe the charities that are less advanced, you know, particularly the 50% who don't have anything much. Maybe they're living a hand-to-mouth existence, where they're, you know, just about raising enough funds to deliver their services in the same way that they've been delivering them for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever, doesn't matter. I think we're saying around this table, we still think digital is relevant to them, and they should be considering it. But how do they actually move forward? You know, these organisations, they're not going to have huge budgets, which let them go and get some consultants to kind of help them work through the process. They're going to have to do it on the cheap. How are they going to do it?
And I'm going to say there are a lot of simple off-the-shelf, again, back office software out there now that they could put in place, you know, with some help, but very easily. And again, we're talking a couple of £100 a year of license fees. We're not talking more than that. Some things like Xero for finance software, or Expensify for expenses management, or there's another one, the name escapes me, for timesheet management, for, you know, when you're accounting for grants. And those aren't the big transformational systems. They're minute steps in the right direction, but they're also about embedding that idea that actually digital can be helpful, that it doesn't have to be big, it doesn't have to be complicated. You can take small steps. And a lot of these software now, if you choose carefully, do talk to each other. They're compatible, they're open. And so if you end up moving to a bigger solution, you don't lose everything that you've done before. That's the advantage of taking an off-the-shelf solution rather than building something from scratch. So I would say start small. It doesn't have to be big. Look around, find an accounting software that works for you. Find a timesheet management software that works for you and do it like that, and then see how that goes, and then do the next one.
Talk to you, Jonathan. that's what they need to do. They need to talk to you, because actually the resources, Claire said, there's plenty available, but where do you go? That fear factor, they're almost like small business. They are small businesses. I mean, it's no different to the commercial sector. They're small businesses. They can't put the money in. They're running at reduced margins. So they need that expertise, particularly in technical or digital areas. They need the expertise. They should be talking to people like yourselves to guide them into where they go, to give them that step, particularly at a certain size. If you're talking about bigger organizations, I think that's a different story. But definitely that small level. There's so much free software. It's more, there's so too much choice, and there you get the confusion.
I just following on from that point, I think don't do it yourself, because there's so much opportunity to actually understand from other organisations who might be local, who might not be in the same sector as you are, but also have the same challenges which exist.
Mm-hmm.
Digital is not new, and it's going to continue to change. And as has been said, the speed of change is going to accelerate as well. So you're going to be absolutely swamped if you try and do it all yourself. So think about who locally might be in the same boat as yourselves, not necessarily the same sector, and go on a journey together and learn off each other as you're going through that journey as well.
Yeah, I think the smaller organisations out there, and again, not just in charity, but even in small businesses, that the challenges there are, you know, in fixing the plumbing, you know, getting the boring but important stuff right. It's the simple stuff like integration, you know, the use of data, you know, whether you've got the right skill sets on board, you know, how you, you know, map the things that you're already doing to the things you need to do, stopping the things that you shouldn't be doing as an organization as well. I think there's a great deal out there that is simply about internal ways of working for small organizations. Mm. As opposed to, you know, big systemic change, which actually for a small organization is much easier to do because you're not as, you know, embedded in the things you've always done, you know, and it's easier to shift. It's easier to act like a startup if you're a small organization.
So I think, Vince, you probably touched on one of the challenges there, saying that actually maybe there's too much choice in terms of what people do. So, you know, one of the essences of strategy is always, how do you make the choices as to which area to focus in? So, you know, it might be for a charity, they say, well, we can do one thing in the next year digitally. How do they choose that one thing?
For me, you have to go back to what is the most imperative thing for your business or your organisation to succeed. And that is your priority area, which you should focus on. People talk to me about, let's try and do some small projects in a number of different areas, and we can decide from there what to ramp up. My own particular view is that it can often be quite distracting away from actually where your focus should be. And in that regard, you should always be looking at what is the thing which is going to stop us from delivering our outcomes over the course of the next 2 years. And if that is going to be something from a financial footing, then you know you should be focusing on finance systems. If it's something which is in terms of where your income is coming in from, then you know it might be something to do with fundraising platform. But it is really taking it back to the imperative of what do I need to deliver the outcomes which I'm set up to deliver over the next 2 years.
I agree with that completely. I would also add something, which is fix your broken windows. And the broken window is this thing that you pass every day, and that window's been broken for 3 years, and you don't see it anymore, and it may be the email system doesn't work. It's never worked, or your document sharing process doesn't work. And usually the way to know that you have a broken window is that people are finding ways to go around it. So a finance system is so bad that everybody is using Excel. That's a broken window. You know, this is the sort of thing that is an annoyance every day, but you've sort of gotten used to it now and you work around it. Try to fix that, because you'll feel so much better afterwards, and it will be the first step towards a longer journey.
That's where you're going. Shadow IT systems, isn't it? Exactly. Yeah. You know, you get somebody that's tried rest control on and coordinates in some way, shape, or form. I absolutely agree. I think that there are always those things that people have to work around in order to just make things work. And I think one of the biggest challenges for anybody trying to define where a digital future needs to be headed within an organization is a credibility gap between the ambition and the reality on the ground. You know, this is what's happening. I can't get an email out, or, you know, I can't get online, or, you know, this connectivity is ridiculous in here. You know, I don't have the right equipment, so I've got my own bring your own device policy, you know, all of those things, which need to be solved, and you need to be able to do that in order to close that credibility gap so that you can talk about the future with, I guess, you know, a degree of trust within the organisation.
The only thing, probably a blend of the two points there, really. I think you can fix the broken windows, but if that, it needs to be aligned with what is the imperative of the business first. And this goes back to the first point about the digital strategy. It needs to be aligned with the business strategy. If the business strategy is to save money or is to reduce friction within the organisation that's causing the frustration of the broken window, then yes, fix it, coordinate it, essentially saying, this is what we're going to do here, this is what we're going to do next. But it's that it goes back to that sitting it at the centre, completely aligned with the organisational strategy, not a separate strategy. And when it isn't aligned centrally, that's when you get the shadow IT, because everyone's trying to do their own thing to fix it. And it, for me, it keeps coming back to sit it in the middle, sit it alongside the people that are making the decisions, because they're not separate. They're completely the same thing. They're just, you use digital tools to deliver your corporate or your business or your charity strategy, whichever it is. And that frustration of broken windows clearly means that the business, it doesn't understand enough about himself of what the main problems are.
So I'm interested in what you think the main pitfalls that charities should avoid when they're developing a digital strategy or the digital elements of their strategy.
I have a real issue with proprietary software, not so much because of my charity work, but because of work I've done before in the media. The number of media companies I've seen who built a massive steam engine and then couldn't maintain it, or the company went broke, or they stopped, you know, servicing it. And it's not always possible, but whenever possible, go open source, go borrow off the shelf. Unless you're an incredibly large and powerful organization, I kind of feel like you'll always be better off doing that. That's my view.
I agree, and it's certainly one of the challenges which we have to consider at Centrepoint is how do we make sure that whatever digital tools are put in place can be maintained without having to go back out for significant development costs externally over a long period of time as well. So it's not just the upfront costs which you need to consider, it's the full lifetime of the costs which you actually have to put in place, the skills which is required to maintain it. And I would probably argue, therefore, that in actually looking at how you actually develop the digital aspects of your strategy, you need to make sure that you understand what are the needs that you're trying to fulfill first. So don't go for this is a great piece of technology and then try and think how will it fit within our organization. But actually take it back to what is our needs of an organization to actually deliver something. And that might come down to we need to make sure that we have the tools which enables us to actually keep the dialogue on an ongoing basis with the people who utilize our service. But at the same time, the need might be something that we need to make sure that we have in place a tool which can be maintained within the business on an ongoing basis. And I don't think that the two counteract each other, they're just as important.
I'd say that there's often a temptation to become distracted by shiny things. And, you know, it happens less so nowadays because I think that people have gone through that learning curve and, you know, are now aware that actually there's huge amounts of wastage in, you know, developing things like proprietary tools, you know, or being purely reactive based on something that's happening in their sphere and, you know, will make them look good, but actually has no longevity built into it. So I think, you know, that there is a need to be reactive at times, but there's an absolute need to be more planned than reactive. So ensuring that you have your North Star and you stick to it doggedly, but at the same time, you know, that can shift, understanding how and when and what the criteria are, when that shifts, and how to respond as an organisation, not simply as a function or a discipline within an organisation. It has to move the entire thing together.
I'm on the shiny thing, I think I'm just going to say AI. That's currently very shiny at the moment. But the reality, I think, is it came back again in the threads earlier, is accepting that this is now business. There is a cost to doing business. And some of the issues of legacy and tech debt that's built up, running little pilots that then cause cost puddles all over the place. the organizations need to accept that this is, when you say a transformation, it doesn't mean there's a beginning and an end. It's an ongoing journey and you're on it. And part of that is taking into account all of these additional new ways of working, such as the legacy costs, the security costs, the training costs, or the engagement and the technical people that are involved in doing it. They're not a one-off project cost. It's BAU is now going to cost more to do it, because that's the cost of doing business. And I think that's the, it goes back again for me, of that people being aware at the senior level of this is how you do business now with digital tools. And back to the startup, that's the norm. We've got to pay for a platform, we've got to pay for storage, we've got to pay for expertise to do this. It's a no-brainer. And I think that discrepancy still is there. It's disappearing, but it's still there. That's the pitfall.
Hi, it's Jonathan here again. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but I wanted to bring you news of an exciting new service that we're launching. It's called Digital Strategy on a Plate. It comprises 7 interactive webinar sessions delivered with a small cohort over 3 months. And you'll come away from it with a digital strategy for your organization. Because we use a hands-on coaching and tutoring approach for a small group, we have to charge for this service. But if you are interested, do please get in touch with us at events@charitydigital.org.uk. Hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast.
It'd be good to finish by just kind of focusing on what we think are some really great examples of charities who are devising and executing digital strategies. And I guess, you know, this can be any type of charity, any element of digital as well.
I'm going to talk more on the service delivery side, because I think that's always a difficult area to digitize. And I don't have amazing examples of something very new, but I'm always impressed by charities who use existing solutions and existing channels and existing software to their end. And in a sort of light touch way, in the UK, beat the Organization Against Eating Disorder for Teens is incredible in social media. I think they're just brilliant. And it's clearly where their audience is going to be. And they do a really great job of using that channel. They haven't. They've got a fairly limited website and they do their work through social media because that's where the people that they want to talk to are. And I think they've done a really good job of that. I don't know them. I don't know how they manage it. But as a sort of outside spectator, I've been quite impressed. In other parts of the world, in Southeast Asia, for instance, a lot of charities are using WhatsApp groups in a very innovative and clever way, sometimes even including micropayment structures. And that's great, because they haven't built a new shiny platform that people there wouldn't be able to install on their legacy phones anyway. They're using something that's there and that's free. And Facebook and WhatsApp have been fairly open with their API, and I think that's a really nice way of thinking about it. You don't need to start from scratch. You can look around and see what you can piggyback on.
I think there's lots of examples of charities who have done fantastically well from a digital marketing and digital fundraising perspective, and right across the board, been raising the bar in that agenda. Interestingly, you know, if I think about the sector and who has actually really mastered embedding digital right away across the organisation, might be, I don't know, but none immediately spring to mind for myself, which suggests that we are on a journey in that space. It is quite an old example, but if we go outside the sector now, the example which I would always go back to is Burberry. And from that regard, making sure that digital wasn't done just in one part of the organisation, but all aspects of the organisation considered when the challenges which they came up from buying the raw materials through to logistics, through to the shops and how the shops looked and screens which put it up in the shops, were all done through a digital lens, and that was by actually embedding digital expertise into every part of the business. And it's probably no surprise that Angela Adrex, who was leading the business, went on to Apple as a result of what she had done on that regard. So I'm afraid I'm struggling from a whole round perspective in this sector, and I'd probably have to go out with to actually look at somebody who's mastered it right across the board.
I think it is hard to identify single examples because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there are so many different tracks through which an organization might do digital well. But you know, if we sort of to move away from the area of fundraising and campaigning as, you know, the two most used, I guess, areas in terms of digital, I think, you know, a successful implementation of digital across the board within an organization in society would be looking at how it changes the way they do their programmatic work. So that might be, you know, for health charities, what does it mean to sort of use technology for in-home care, for example? You know, for an organization like Amnesty, you know, what does it mean to use technology as part of their programmatic human rights work? You know, that's something I was very close to and was very keen on establishing within the organization. So it's you know, and I think there are obvious areas like ICT4D, which has done sort of pockets of great work, but there's a lot of shiny stuff there as well, to be honest. So I think it's you know, we're perhaps too close to the point of change to know what success looks like. I think we'll have to look at it a few years down the line and look back and say, actually, that really worked, didn't it?
I think the thing that when I'm ruminating on how this question is really, where is an organization use digital tools to deliver what their purpose is? I think that's the one that's really interesting to me. And things like Just Giving stand out, where they've used data extensively to really monetize their platform and brand that. I think that's good. I'm going to go closer to home. We've just recently been doing some work, albeit a pilot, with Vodafone. This has just come out in the press, where we're using, and Vodafone have pretty much paid for this and developed this, of using off-the-shelf tools, of a lot of assistive technology tools around the people we support. And that's been very useful, very interesting, by using cheap ways to improve the person with a learning disability's life, apps, connected living, etc. That's us looking at what we're trying to achieve first and then the tech coming second. Those are the things that stand out to me. And other issues of, you know, using, on a personal level, using Macmillan to support with somebody that had cancer and using that as a knowledge base to go to rather than the NHS. Macmillan was that extra arm. But that's come back to the purpose of what the charity's for and what they're trying to deliver. And that's so varied with 166,000 charities and where somebody's taken some digital tools to deliver that. That's what stands out to me.
Yeah, I think from a personal perspective, I can actually comment on this, having joined Charity Digital a little bit over a year ago as well, that when I came in, I was actually really impressed with the work that had been done on the back office systems to ensure that the charity ran well internally. You know, so there was, you know, Xero had been implemented, we had Expensify for the expenses, People HR managing the HR, obviously, you know, Office 365 doing all of those kind of office productivity, you know, so a really nice, well-integrated suite of core applications. So that was great to see that had been done. But then, you know, when I was coming in and looking at where we go next, it actually, the focus straight went to the core purpose and, you know, we need to have more impact in terms of how we help charities, and therefore we need to, and we're now doing this work, replace our core platform that is actually doing all of our publishing and sharing of information. So I think that also illustrates this point of it's an escalator, it never ends. You know, once you've done some of the basic plumbing, then it's kind of like you need to be looking at the what next, and you obviously have the opportunity to do the what next as well, because hopefully if some of the stuff you've done before is working well, then you may be saving some money on your core operations. It's a really fantastic conversation there. We've explored a lot of different areas of digital strategy, so I'd just like to thank all of you for your time today. Really appreciate you coming in and having a really interesting and stimulating conversation.
Thank you very much.
If you found this podcast interesting and useful, then I'd like to invite you to download our step-by-step guide to digital strategy. You can get to this at charitydigitalnews.co.uk. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, then do please like it and subscribe so you can get access to lots more of the content that we've got coming down the line. We've got a whole variety of different topic areas. And finally, we'd love to have your feedback. So do please email us at podcasts@charitydigital.org.uk. Thank you and goodbye.